Hi, welcome to the Freedom from Fibromyalgia Summit. I'm Dr. Roger Murphy. I'm your host, and I want to introduce you to Dr. Eric Gordon. Dr. Gordon is one of my new favorite colleagues. It seems like we're on some kind of Zoom call every other week, but you'll soon learn why. It's really fun hanging out with him. And we're going to be talking about cell danger theory. This is a paradigm that really ties a lot of things together for fibromyalgia. So I'm really excited to have Dr. Gordon here. Dr. Gordon is the president of Gordon Medical Research Center. He is the clinical director for the Gordon Medical Association, and he specializes in complex chronic illnesses in addition to his clinical practice of over 40 years. So he's got me beat. And he's done quite a bit of research. You're going to tell us about that today. But one of the things is this research, he co-wrote a paper with Dr. Robert Navio all about cell danger theory. And we're going to go into detail about that and share with you some of the practicalities of how that affects fibromyalgia. And I think you're going to really be fascinated by this conversation. So Eric, welcome again. Hey, share with the audience that may not have heard this term, cell danger theory, this whole cell danger response theory, CDR.
Yeah. Well, the CDR is a concept that Dr. Navio, developed and wrote about over time. You know, of course, he took many other people's ideas and did put them together in a context. But to me, it's an explanation of how your body heals. Okay. It's, just to lay it out, generally everyday, repair work, I always call, the general repair work that happens every night when you sleep. Dr. Navio calls that the healing cycle, he calls that the health cycle, and the cell danger response is the stuff that you do after you've gotten a illness or a real injury. He calls, the healing response, and that's where the cell danger issue comes in. Okay, that's where this choreographed mitochondrial response to injury happens. So the most important part of this for most people is the idea that the mitochondria are not just making energy. Okay, so I think that's the thing. We all learned to have this idea that our mitochondria are energy production cell organelle in the body, and that when your energy is low, it's because your mitochondria are sick, or damaged. Yeah. Okay, and so I guess probably I'd say the big news for people is that Dr. Navio is telling us that when you are ill and you have this, what we call sickness behavior, you're tired, you can't think straight, you got that brain fog, you ache all over, that you don't really want to deal with other people, you just want to be alone. That's sickness behavior. We see it in animals, you see it in one cell organisms. That is being choreographed by your mitochondria. Okay. And that is the big news. It's not just the mitochondria are got infected and now they're not making energy. No, they have actually decided to make less energy and to create and to make less ATP. So that is the heart of the cell danger response, is that your mitochondria, when you're ill, are not sick. Even when you're chronically ill, they're working like they're supposed to. The problem is, when you're chronically ill, you're in a bit of a dysfunctional system, and when you get acutely ill, this is how the system was designed, to make you lie down, hang out in the corner, not want to interact with other people, not want to eat much. That's sickness behavior. The problem with sickness behavior, as patients with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue and other illnesses find out, is that when it stays, it's not helpful anymore. For 2 or 3 days, lying in bed and not talking to other people is sort of like your body's natural quarantine. You're just not going to expose the rest of your family and your tribe and your society to what made you sick. But anyway, so that's supposed to be short-lived. So the heart of the cell danger response is that the mitochondria is now acting as an immune commander, if you will. Okay, it's turning down the energy and signaling by putting ATP onto the surface of the cell, because the ATP normally is used to transfer energy molecules throughout the cell. But when the mitochondria sense danger, they start to put some ATP on the outside of the cell. And that acts on what we call the purinergic nervous system, which is just to say another signaling pathway in the body. Purines, ATP is a purine molecule, but and there's a whole lot of other ones. But the important thing is that when there's a little more ATP on the outside of the cell, that signals your immune system that that cell is sick.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the first immune signal. So that is the heart of the cell danger response, is that your mitochondria sense danger, and they sense it because they usually get these raw materials from how you're from the rest of the cell. Okay, that inside the mitochondria is where you burn your fat for energy. And you break down protein sometimes for energy, and you take the pyruvate to make energy. So when they're not working, all those things build up. And what really happens is oxygen builds up inside the cell, which makes this pro-oxidant environment. That's why everybody's busy taking antioxidants, is because of this. Well, you know, when you're first sick, I always tell people a lot of antioxidants, don't always do that much, because your body's creating this oxidant problem. Because, and this I'm going to stop in a minute because I don't want to get too confusing, but mitochondria are the part of your cell that actually uses oxygen. Okay, when you make ATP, you make oxygen, you take oxygen and you make it into water kind of at the same time. And when the mitochondria are not making energy, you're not making that water, which is, in my mind, I think one of the reasons that people often have that dehydrated sense when they're ill. But I know, but that's my idea. I don't want to claim that as a scientific fact, but to me, that makes a lot of sense. But the thing we do know is that because you're not using up the oxygen inside the mitochondria, the oxygen concentration inside the rest of the cell, what we call the cytoplasm, goes up. And that triggers your antioxidant defenses to turn on. But first, it helps kill viruses and bugs inside the cell. So anyway, so this is kind of like the overview of the mitochondria as protecting you, as being able to turn on your immune system and turn down energy production. Now, that's all well and good, but just like everything in the body, we're systems. We're designed to turn on and turn off and turn on and turn off and turn on and turn off. When we have a linear pathway in the body, we usually get into trouble. So if we get stuck in any stage of this cell danger response, we tend to have persistent inflammation. So, I'm just going to give you a quick overview of CDR 1, 2, and 3 as Dr. Navio describes it, but we're not going to go into the weeds with this because I have put to sleep many a medical audience with the fine details. So yeah. just the broad strokes is that the CDR 1 is what happens when you first get infected or hurt, you know, and in medicine, we call it, you see redness. The skin, the area will get swollen, red. In regular medicine, we call the signs of inflammation redness, loss of function, pain. That's what happens in CDR1. Your innate immune system. If people are familiar now with COVID, everybody's become an immunologist. That's when you have all those neutrophils and macrophages going into the area. That's CDR1, and at that point, you're making all your energy is coming from burning glucose. Because what people don't realize is that when you really need a lot of energy, you burn sugar, mm-hmm. not in the mitochondria, but right in the cytoplasm. It's because that you can produce a short burst of an amazing amount of energy just by burning sugar. It's less efficient, than the mitochondria, because you only get two ATP or three or four, depending, when you burn sugar directly, rather than about 34 or 36 ATP when you burn it through the mitochondrial pathways. But you can put out 50,000 times more, because you only have 400 to maybe 4,000 or 5,000 mitochondria in a cell. But you can turn up the small group of proteins and enzymes to like by 50,000 fold in the cytoplasm. So you can do, you can, you know, really nail the gas, but you run out quick. So anyway, so that's CDR1, this energy intensive system but it's very inefficient. So if you have enough cells that are stuck in CDR1, you're going to really want sugar. I mean, it's funny, you know, we always talk about carbohydrate craving in our patients, and we think of yeast and other, you know, cell, you know, bacterial overgrowth in the gut. But on some level, there are some people, it's just that they have enough cells, you know, in certain parts of their body that are stuck in this CDR1, that glucose just gives them instant energy, because their mitochondria are not turned on. Now, again, I always want to emphasize, this is usually happening in only percentages of your cells, whether they're, you know, 1%, 5%, 10, you know, if you start getting to the, you know, 20, 30, 50% of your cells are stuck in this, you're probably at the point of like, you're in the hospital, you're really dying, you have sepsis, you know, you really have organ failure. You know, the good part is that the body can compartmentalize things pretty well. So this is CDR1, acute inflammation, okay? And there are people with fibro who can have, be stuck in that sometimes. The CDR2 is the next step. So your body has, in CDR1, you kill the bug if you can, you contain the inflammation, you stop the bleeding, you know, if it's an injury. You know, you chew up the injured tissue, you know, because if you've had a, you know, a cut or a crush, you know, you got to get rid of the old stuff. And then in CDR2, your mitochondria turn up a notch. They start to use oxygen. Okay. But at this point, but they're still not making a lot of ATP for the cell to use. They're beginning to make more raw materials. They're beginning to give you they're beginning to make the raw materials that let your body make more RNA and DNA, because now the cell is trying to heal. Now it's beginning to reproduce. It's fixing injured organelles. It's deciding whether it's going to reproduce. It's producing signals that draw in stem cells to come in and give the signals, more signaling to make more daughter cells to rebuild the injured area. Now, which is all good, but your need for energy is still fairly dependent on burning sugar. And if too many cells are stuck in this stage, people wind up with things like type 2 diabetes, hypertension, and things of that sort. And you know, and I always like to remind people that insulin resistance is a big marker for inflammation. And though we probably should have said this in the beginning, you and I have talked about this in the past, that in my mind, all chronic illness, and especially things like fibromyalgia, are chronic inflammation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it comes in different flavors, but at the end of the day, it's immune cells that haven't figured out that the war is over. But also your mitochondria haven't figured out that the war is over, because it's a communication system. We can't, you know, we always want to cut the circle and say, well, the mitochondria are in control. They're doing everything. But I don't know where it starts, you know, the chicken or the egg. I don't know where this circle starts, but I do know they're talking to each other. So somebody's got to start changing the conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, the mitochondria either have to decide that the war is over and they start putting out the peace signals, or the immune system has to. And, you know, obviously they do it together with a lot of crosstalk. But, you know, I think it's the body should be a great lesson for those of us who want peace in the world, when you realize how many small steps each system has to do to give the other one the security that it's okay to move forward.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm getting obtuse there for a minute, but it just always amazes me when people always want, you know, to be peace, but they want the other guy to do all the actions, you know. And we really have, I mean, like, that's where the great diplomats know the usefulness of these small signals that, you know, we really mean okay, but we're just doing a little something, because that's how your body changes. A million changes of small signals. And then suddenly you make a quantum leap. And you go from CDR1, where you're killing and destroying cells, breaking up cells, to suddenly CDR2, where you're healing the cells. And then you go to CDR3, which is really one of the more interesting places to be, because CDR3 is when the cell has matured. It's back to being functioning, but it still has to fix its membrane. It still has to get that communication, because one of the things that happens in CDR1 is that the cell membrane thick hardens. You know, people talk about, you know, like how important it is to have all those polyunsaturated fats in your cell membrane and be nice loosey-goosey. And well, but when there's danger, that cell membrane, the proteins in it change, and you develop, you start spewing off exosomes, by the way, because those are communication molecules often that, you know, tell the other cells that there's danger or that it's safe to heal, depending. But these are little pinching off things of your cell membrane. But there's a lot of changes in the cell membrane in inflammation. And right in the beginning, that cell membrane becomes less permeable. Okay, the ion channels change their shape. So all the calcium and potassium and all those magnesium going across don't go as easily. Yeah. One of the reasons our patients have such trouble with magnesium when they're in, you know, I mean, like this is because they're not getting into the cell as well. That's why they respond sometimes to those IVs of magnesium or high doses of magnesium, or, you know, like, because just that membrane isn't letting it in. So anyway, so in stage 1, you know, those cell membranes are really hardened. In CDR2, they're beginning to change. But in CDR3 is when they're really, the cell is learning how to be a heart cell, how to cooperate with the cells around it. Because in the beginning, just like people, when you're acutely ill, you're not in a very cooperative mood. You know, hey, will you take out the garbage? You know, you're laying in bed and feeling like crap. You don't want to be helpful. You know, people usually know not to ask. In fact, you know, that's one of the issues that we all have with people who've been chronically ill, is that they do become irritable. And it's not because they're bad people. It's just because that's the biochemistry of the system, is like, leave me alone. Yeah. Well, it's happening on the cellular level also.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. And in CDR3, we're beginning to learn how to cooperate, how to hear those thyroid hormones. Okay. Because that's something, you know, we learn to a lot of that thyroid resistance, because if you have a lot of cells that are stuck in CDR3, you might just, you know, those, the T4 and T3 numbers might look fine, but the cell's not responding. You know, until it matures, until it finishes the healing cycle, and then it's back to normal. So you got the CDR1, that acute inflammation, CDR2, you're beginning to rebuild lost cell, you know, damaged cells, and CDR3, they're kind of, as Bob says, they're going to school. They're learning how to communicate, you know, and be part of society again.
So, you know, I think, so there's a lot there, and people are going, ooh, wow, where did that go? But the reason why is because we're really diving down in and trying to understand vitalism in the cell. I mean, we have this inborn, innate healing dynamo that's inside each one of us. And, you know, we don't have to think about taking 12 breaths per minute. We don't have to think about pumping blood through our arteries and veins and digesting our food, any of these things. This is happening, this innate, inborn healing dynamo, these systems, largely controlled by the hypothalamus and some of these other organs, is making this happen. And what the reason why I like this paradigm, because I think it's such a fit for fibro, in that we know in fibromyalgia, they have less mitochondria, and that oftentimes the mitochondria they have been compromised. Now we have something that's telling us, here's one of the reasons why the mitochondria have been compromised. And if, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, he uses this analogy, Teitelbaum, who's on the summit as a fibromyalgia expert, and he uses the analogy of fibromyalgia is like a fuse that's blown, and you've lost this energy. It's an energy drain, which totally makes sense when you're losing the ability of this mitochondria to work like it's supposed to. I made the mistake of saying to Neil Nathan the other day, we were talking a little bit about this. I said, you know, the cell danger theory, I really like it. It really fits so many things that I've found missing in the fibromyalgia model for the last 20 years dealing with these folks. With the cell danger theory, where the body's overreacting. And he said, wait a minute, I wouldn't say that. It's really the body's doing what it's supposed to. It's just not turning off. And now we got to realize there's things that we've got to do to help it turn off and feel safe again.
Yeah.
And I wanted to give this example, and I think this will pull together what you just shared. This example of you've got a virus that, like COVID, it gets inside your cell, and what the mitochondria, which is the messenger and the power plant of the cell, and all these little organs in there, these organelles, it feels threatened. And as you said, the membrane around the cell becomes hardened. So it's trying to keep the virus, or it could be a mold toxin, it could be, some other type of toxin in there. It's trying to keep it contained. And then, as you mentioned, the mitochondria, instead of releasing this oxygen, holds onto it because it feels threatened, and it builds up, and then it releases this redox effect where it's trying to kill the virus or the toxin. But then in the process, it kills everything around the cell as well and sets up all this immune reaction, right? That's what you're saying, yeah. This immune reaction that's generating all these chemicals, and that certainly inflammatory chemicals, but histamine and mast cell. And then and I could keep going, but then it sabotages our methylation system. So many of you have heard about the problems of MHFTR or methylation issues, which sabotages your neurotransmitters. One of those in particular is serotonin, because it can sabotage the amino acid tryptophan from converting into 5-hydroxytryptophan. So it's a model for me, even though it sounds complicated, it really is a model that brings a lot of the challenges of explaining what's going on in a fibromyalgia patient together in a way that, okay, we've got a toxin, we got a virus, we got something that's the straw that breaks the camel's back. The body's reacting to this. Now, what are the steps that we can do to turn off this response so the body feels safe again?
Yeah, well, and you taking that idea that the that the mitochondria is reacting to a threat now, and that is our first step. But sometimes what makes this even more complicated for us is that sometimes most of the threat can be gone and the system is stuck.
Right.
And then it's like, and then we have to, because, and the reason I believe the system gets stuck is in this loop of creating more inflammation, and then your immune system, is trying to, immune system gets involved and continues to release inflammatory chemicals. And then you get, what we talked about earlier before we went on, of how, one of the heart of fibromyalgia is the sleep disorder. And then you get inflammation in the brain, and you're not sleeping, and so, but the basis behind all of this is the body is trying to protect itself. Okay, I think that's the heart of the cell danger response, is that self-protection there's an old quote, I don't remember who said it, but is the first rule of self-defense, is the first rule of life, and so your body's prime directive is self-protection. Okay. Yeah. And but life is about constant interaction. Okay, so if you're just going to protect yourself, you're going to hide in the corner and not move. And yeah, that does not work, because the paradox of life is that the only thing that really works is opening, okay, being interactive. I mean, even on the cellular level. So we have to, for healing, and what I know that you do from your programs, I mean, which is so exciting, is that you help people restore the sense of safety, okay, by helping them sleep better, you know, helping them eat better, you know, helping them breathe and think better. You know, it's all a sense of restoring the sense of safety. That's why many of the, you know, the simple things that people talk about, and often people laugh at, they think, oh, that doesn't do anything. Like, you know, walking on the ground, walking in nature, you know, being, you know, just being being in nature and like actually taking in the wonder, the awe of and the beauty. That's healing, you know, letting yourself, you know, feel the cycles of life is healing. Being around children or young or pets or dogs or, you know, cats. I mean, like, these are all things that give the body a sense of safety and healing. And we have to do that biochemically as well. I mean, that's where we get into the thing of finding the supplement that is not going to push the system too hard and create too much inflammation, but is going to allow the body to feel safe. I know this is, esoteric conversations always thrill me, but I know how frustrating they are for patients when they go, okay, so what do I do with this? Yeah. You know, and, you know, but really, I think that is the bottom line. And this is one of Dr. Navio's, you know, teachings of Dr. Navio. I have to say is that you mentioned Neil, and I have to, Neil was working with me when I sent him, somebody sent me a paper of Bob's in 2013, that's Dr. Navio. And it would just amaze me, because he'd explained to me why all the antioxidants my patients were on at the time. And, you know, when people would come in literally with shopping bags and boxes full of supplements, you know, and they weren't helping them. And it bugged the hell out of me, because I had by this time sort of stopped giving them out like I used to, because in the 90s, it was the thing, all we were told, antioxidants, you know, and that worked in people who weren't too ill. But my clinic was more and more people who were like, you know, bedbound and sick and blah, 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 like, you know, chronic, all kinds of things. And so I found that the sicker they were, the less useful most of the supplements were. Yeah. When they were healthy or just a little ill, the supplements were amazing. But yeah, the sicker they got, the less traction I got. And Dr. Navio explained that through the cell danger response, that, you know, your mitochondria, it doesn't matter what you serve them, they're not eating, you know, yeah. And it's because they're stuck in a loop of danger. And anyway, so the point of Neil is that Neil was the one who said, we got to meet this man. And then we had a meeting in December. I'll never forget it. It was in San Diego. We went to, that's where Bob is. And we had lunch, and we 3 hours later, we said, you know, somebody, we got to do something. And that's, that was an amazing, because Bob has just got a brain that I love, you know. It's like he's got a depth of understanding of biochemistry and physiology, like, it's very rare. So long story short is his new idea, not new, but I mean, what he started to get to is that we spend all of our time studying pathology, you know, how you got sick. And I like to think I think we're kind of experts in that, you know. Is it a bug? Is it a mold? Is it, you know, a mycotoxin? You know, is it a, you know, an environmental toxin? You know, is it your mast cells? You know, we're experts in the pathophysiology, what's wrong. But when people are really stuck, what you have also found, because I can tell from your teachings, is you gotta help people get back to health. And it's not the reverse pathway, because many times you can remove the trigger, mm-hmm, but the patient still stays sick. So you have to give them what he calls salugenesis, you know, the return to health. You have to put them on a healthy path.
Yeah.
And that's where nature, love, safety. But that's often the hardest thing to do because, you know, the sicker you, the longer you've been ill, the more anxiety, and in many people, the tendency to obsessive compulsive thinking begins to take over. And that's there to protect you. I mean, those are not, you know, those are self-protective traits that in certain situations can be really helpful.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I think it's Phil Lutz, and in the book, The Tools, he talks about the maze, where you get in the maze and you can't get out. And I see this with patients who, and I totally understand them. You've got an illness that few people understand, few people can help you with. People are telling you just learn to live with it and you're miserable, but you get in this maze where you just can't get out. All you think about is how bad you feel because it's just another day. You feel, you know, you feel bad and you get in this pattern. But what the cell danger response theory, the thing that really ties it to me with fibro is that, you know, if you've got somebody that's got 15 tacks in their foot, and you pull out two or three, are they going to notice a difference? They don't. These are the folks that come to us and they've got a shopping bag full of supplements. They're taking all this. It's a shotgun kind of approach. The problem with that is there's several steps, but they're not single. I mean, they've got to be connected. There's a connection, a thread that runs through these things. Along with working on the biochemical deficiencies, you've also got to do these other things that you talked about. You know, getting out in nature, connecting with other people, nurturing your soul. That part is oftentimes forgotten because we're looking for that magic pill, that magic therapy, whatever it is. We don't realize that you can't get here to health without doing all these things. Yeah. And I learned that the hard way over the years, because I would think, oh yeah, God, I've got, here's the testing, you know, I know exactly where they're broken down. I'm going to put them on these supplements or these medications, whatever we're doing. And sure, we can fix them. But then they go back into that toxic house, you know, that toxic marriage, that toxic workspace. They never deal with that stress that's creating this danger that they're experiencing.
Yeah. And this is where you brought something I want to emphasize. There's the big difference between acute and chronic illness. Now, in medicine terms, acute means an illness that's, you know, 1 to 3 months, and chronic is greater than 6 months. I don't know where the 3 to 6 month period falls into, but basically, you know, acute is something, if you get sick, you might get really sick, but, you know, you don't have to, you just lie there, you eat, you do what you're supposed to do, and you recover, you know. Yeah. And if you're young, you tend to have 100% recovery, you're 90%. You know, when you get older, you don't do so well, but still, you recover. But chronic illness is when that you haven't gone through that pathway. We said the CD, you know, acute illness, CDR 1, 2, and 3 is happening. CDR 1 is usually very short-lived. CDR 2 can take much longer. CDR 3 can take time as well, but it's healing, it's going, you're getting better. You don't need a lot of intervention. Sometimes you just need that original insult removed. So you get the surgery, you take out the infection, the bone gets, you know, fused, it goes back together. You know, medicine works wonders in the acute stage of life. Okay, that's where we save you. You get bashed in the car accident, you know, half dismembered. They put you back together and, you know, hey, you do fairly well, maybe even great, you know. But it's when you get stuck in this chronic world, that's where this cell danger response becomes critical, and understanding that it's signals. You now have to send myriad signals to the body to let it know that it's safe, because somewhere along the way, it decided. I think that the psychological stories that you know, you go when you go to the therapist, you hear about, they actually work very well to understand medicine. I mean, and that's why Chinese medicine is so useful, because they just have stories. Medicine, we confuse people with facts. And I mean that only half jokingly. Okay, because we don't understand how the body works. in detail well enough to believe just the facts. Okay. If you build a bridge, well, any engineer can look at that bridge and do some measurements and know that that's a solid bridge. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we don't have a clue what makes a solid person. Okay. We come in so many different flavors. We have so many, our biochemistry is so individualized, you know. Yeah. It all, just like the bridge, it all will have steel and, you know, girders and stuff. But we work so differently inside.
Yeah.
You know, so we don't know it. So story is actually more you. I mean, this is kind of hard for people who, like, you know, we worship the altar of science. And I, you know, I love going down the rabbit hole of the biochemistry with Dr. Navio. I mean, it thrills me, but it's still not the truth.
Yeah. Okay? And it's only part of the equation.
Yeah. The stories, understanding how systems work, is really story. Okay. And it's based on experience and observation. Okay. It's not based on, you know, we're still waiting. Well, maybe what's that, that new AI program, CB or whatever, is going to give us all the answers, but not yet. Cause I've been trying it for medical questions and it's still pretty superficial, but who knows, maybe it will take over the world soon. But the point is that that's where, you know, the stories of understanding communication, safety, is the essence of healing. Yeah. It comes down to if you can make yourself or your loved one feel safe and accepted, that's step one to letting your body leave the state of chronic inflammation.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, for all the scientific gibberish I can spout, that's the real healing.
Yeah. you know, when we talked the first time and we were sharing this, and I asked you, I'm a biochemistry nerd. That's what I love. Functional medicine, orthomolecular medicine. This is what got me interested in what I've, you know, been doing for the last 30 years. But I asked you, I said, well, Eric, so tell me, how do we fix this cell danger response theory? What are the steps? And I'm thinking, oh, he's going to share some biochemical, you know, some supplements and this, that, and the other. And you said, well, you just got to get to where you feel safe. And then we started talking about what I recommend my patients is this hour power. Now it could be half an hour power, whatever it is, but it's a daily routine where you feed your soul, you know, with whether that's print material or things you're listening to, whether it's Wayne Dyer, Joel Osteen, you know, whatever your flavor is, but something that's really nourishing you, meditation, stretching, things where you spend time to really give yourself the safety that, it, you know, that where you feel safe. And if you're not doing that, then you're just kind of showing up every day and you just, whatever happens to you, and you just react to every kind of stimulation, usually in a way that you probably would not want to react because someone's pushing your buttons and you've not really, you know, put the work in to calm everything down. But there are some things I think that I've learned from that conversation that still apply and even really makes it a better fit in that. Yes, you've got to do the work where you calm everything down, the de-stress work. But then you still got to look for the triggers. So you still got to maybe work on methylation issues. They probably got a problem with, they're not getting the serotonin because they can't use the tryptophan. So maybe try them 5-HTP. You still got to figure out some of these things that are broken down in combination with these self-de-stress activities. But by doing that combination, you can exponentially see the healing going on by combining these things. If you try to do one without the other, I really think you are sabotaging yourself.
Yeah. Well, you're asking for miracles, and miracles do happen. Okay. But we call them miracles for a reason. It's because they don't happen predictably. So yes, if all you want to do is pray for help, for healing and open your soul, that does work sometimes. But most of the time we need all the building blocks, because one supports the psychic, emotional, spiritual, whatever. But on the other hand, like you said, you still have to supply the body with the right energy sources. Yeah, you can relax all you want and keep eating Big Macs, and you're probably not going to get where you need to go.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, that is the point. You have to still find what makes your body safe. You know, do you do better with a plant-based diet? Do you do better with a meat-based diet or a combination? You know, and that's the thing, is finding what signals your body reads as safety. Because and that changes, because some people, there are periods in their healing that they do better, you know, with a really vegetarian diet, and other people, you know, they'll just wilt on that, you know, and that's why we need us still, you know. It's more than just going, life is good, I love you, I'm ready. That's first steps. But then, like you say, we gotta play. If you still have that, you still got five tacks in your foot, you know, prayer doesn't get them out usually.
Yeah. And I think that's why really in functional medicine, the beauty of it is we're looking for the root causes. You know, we are trying to find what are the root triggers, what are the causes of the symptoms, instead of covering them up. And I, you know, as someone with fibromyalgia, it's very difficult to navigate this whole thing on your own, number one. Number two, I think that you can go off on a path that doesn't yield any returns, and you spend a lot of money, a lot of time, and that becomes very frustrating. So one of the things I want to leave everybody with is I really think you need to seek out somebody that can help you figure these triggers out, figure this all out. People ask me, isn't there just something that I can take? Isn't there, you know, five steps? It doesn't work that way. I think Dr. Gordon has kind of shared that with us, is that there's no one size fits all. And that's why you really need to seek out somebody that can help you with the testing and put you on the right track. Hey, Eric, where is the best website for them to go to learn more about you and your practice?
Oh, well, thank you. That just Gordon, very ego-driven, gordonmedical.com. Okay. But we have more than me there. We've got a bunch. I mean, that's one thing. You know, we've got Dr. Parpia and Dr. Kunkel and now Dr. Nelson in there. You know, it's, and we work, you know, I always say it's a creative endeavor. You know, you always get, you know, we share a lot, we talk a lot together, because, you know, we're always learning from each other. That is the beauty. As you said, this is something that, you know, the Band-Aids, you know, it's funny, for the real Band-Aids are the drugs, and that you got to go to the doctor for. but the healing is, you know, you can start off, like you say, with the basics, you know, sleep, better attitude, better diet. But when that's not working, you know, and you got to dig down, then unfortunately you do need help, because there are so many different traps. And it's really easy when you're a patient to read a list of symptoms and go, oh, look, I've got babesia. Oh, no, look, I've got Bartonella. And you read another. And I always used to say, one man's Babesia list is another man's Bartonella list. And, you know, and you can do the same thing for a myriad of chronic illnesses. You read down and say, oh, I've got that, and that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you've got that. You know, I mean, it's frustrating, because, again, when you are, you have a heart attack, we all kind of agree on what the picture, more or less, even there, it's a little vague sometimes, but still, we have lots of clear-cut pictures. But when it comes to something like fibromyalgia, you know, the trigger that dysregulates your immune system to produce these set of what doctors call non-specific functional symptoms, okay, can be myriad.
Yes.
Okay. And so much depends on your own personal biochemistry. And that's where books and conventional doctors fail you. Because one of the things those of us who've been doing this kind of medicine, and there are now thankfully more and more being trained in it, is we know to keep looking. You know, just because you come in and tell me you had a tick bite and this happened, doesn't mean that Lyme is your problem. Right. You know, because lots of people get Lyme and get better. It could be something, you know. So anyway, it's important that you see doctors who understand, as Dr. Murphy was stating, is that, like, you know, Lyme, but it could be a toxic exposure. You know, it could be mold. It could be just that, you know, you had a small thing, except you've got a little problem with, you know, your mast cells, you know, one of your most primitive immune cells being a little on the hyper end.
Yeah.
And then you're stuck in this loop. So anyway, the long speech is just to say that, yeah, it's great to do some basic work on your own.
Yeah.
But when you start thinking that you've got the a disease and you're going to start treating it based on what you read on the internet, again, you can try. But it doesn't usually end well because it's I wish it was that straightforward because, well, I would probably be doing something else because I would be bored then.
Well, yeah. You don't never get bored working with this community or chronically ill patients. I mean, I find it fascinating, rewarding, you know, certainly sometimes intimidating, but it is quite a challenge sometimes. Well, listen, thank you so much. And I want to encourage everybody to check out Dr. Gordon's website. And I look forward to spending some time with you in the future.
Ah, me too. A pleasure. I hope we've given some good information amidst all the big words and big ideas. But thank you so much for the opportunity. Love to share it.